Hello, everybody. Welcome. We are at the beautiful Mulford Farm, at the barn at Mulford Farm in East Hampton. It's July 15th, 2018. We're in the second of our four-part series of the 24th East Hampton Poetry Marathon. Tonight we'll be hearing from two poets, Walter Donway and Tammy Nuzzo Morgan. And our first poet will be Walter Donway. We are being taped by WPKN, which airs on 89.5. And you can always go on their website, WPKN.org, to research when this will be airing. Walter Donway will be sharing tonight from his third collection of poetry, Speak Their Names Once More, 77 poems. This volume painfully includes poems that address with anger and bitter sorrow the Paris, Orlando, Las Vegas, and other terrorist mass killings. His poems have appeared in Long Island Voices, Think, The New Individualist, and on many websites. He is the author of several novels, a collection of essays and stories, and books on political economy and politics. He was founding editor of Cerebrum, the Dana Forum on Brain Science. Walter wrote a very challenging article titled, The Unsolved Murder of Poetry Has a Prime Suspect. It was published online in Savvy Street. In the article, Walter makes a fundamental mistake. He refers to William Butler Yeats as the last great romantic poet. I would argue that Walter is a great romantic poet. And it is not a wonder to me that his imprimatur for his publishing company is called Romantic Revolution Books. Walter is unique among poets, among modern poets, as he is a classical traditionalist who adheres strictly to meter and consistently to rhyme. I quote him, "The essential, that is, defining characteristic of poetry as an art form is meter. The meter, and specifically the variations, are the direction of the speaking voice, and the definitively poetic effects are only achieved this way." Walter believes these two elements are responsible for incomparably enhancing the experience of life and expressing things in the soul otherwise ineffable. I'll take the liberty of reading one of Walter's poems that scrupulously adheres to his primal tenets, and even more so, chaining us to his heart as he is overcome by music. Music master. Neuronal arrays that doze in my brain, awake, fire, flash, on my screen a prairie of wild flowers bowing away down rain, clouds that flee towards mountains I cannot see. Music does this, entrained in patterns gay, mere body fades in a blight sublime. Powdered ladies scandalously sway, advancing to Bach's civilized time. Mere mystic master, rude intoxicant? With you I canter beneath red skies, and though I sue to know where I am sent, no journey ends before the music dies. Disavow this imperious messiah requiring unfastidious adherence? Inquire why clouds part or why we are by turns ecstatic, tearful, and without sense? No, suborn me, and I will follow dumb summonses from palaces unknown. Flay reason, enslave me, I shall come. Whirl for a queen on an alien throne. Let's welcome Walter Donway.
Well, I'm so happy to see this highly select, distinguished audience. Do you remember Everett Dirksen from Illinois? He had a joke. He said, there's a pastor who comes into his church on Sunday, and there's only one parishioner, and the pastor says, well, I guess just since there's one, we won't have a service. And the farmer says, well, if I took a load of hay down to the gate, and it was one lone cow at that gate, sure as hell, I'd feed that cow. So the minister says, yes. And he delivers a sermon, an hour and a half, a hellfire sermon. And the farmer says, well, if I took a load of hay down to the gate, and it was one lone cow, I'd feed him. But sure as hell, I wouldn't drop the whole load. Now to business. There are poems that wait a long time to be born. Wait not for the time the poet starts writing, but until the poet feels ready to write that poem. For example, I've never written a poem about my mother. My father read me the Tarzan books when I was in the third grade, sat beside me on the couch. They became an inspiration to me for my whole life, an inspiration to a moral ideal. In fact, they inspired me very early on to fight back against schoolyard bullies, and ever since. When I finally did write a poem about Tarzan after 50 years, I had a rare experience. I felt that I had said exactly what I wanted to say. To understand the poem, it does help to know a little bit of ape language. Don't worry, it's not a long list, but there's Bulgani for gorilla, and Tantor for elephant, and Sheeta for leopard. Oh, is it panther? Anyway. Tarzan of the Apes, and the dedication is for Dad, who showed me all can be forgiven. I knew that you would come for me, come dropping, forest demigod, from loftiest, implausible green jungle high roads that you trod. Liege lord of titan trees that sweep near heaven, noble imago of man, as sure as marble, slim to life by Michelangelo, you would appear upon my path as sun will touch a single tree, and with your eyes as wild and kind as freedom, you would look at me and nod impartial as a beast or god. And I would go, and soon we'd fly as high as dream desire through trees beneath the jungle moon. And we would never tire, fight and never doubt. Our father's knives, baptized in fierce Bulgani's blood, would bless the battles of our lives. We'd summon good Tantor and tease malicious Sheeta's snarling smile. We'd stride as nude and beautiful as beasts to baffle Satan's guile. At manhood's noon, our two great hearts would stay the lion's breath above the golden woman's blameless breath and slay the lord of death for love and never taste the fatal fruit of fear and never die or die each day and never care who ate our bones or where our bones would lie. I grew up on a farm in Holden, Massachusetts, just north of Worcester. It's a largely Swedish neighborhood, a lot of blondes. This is called Once Seen. By chance, I spied her through our hedge, dark from the door in just her bra, Eddie's sister in her underwear, retrieving the cat from the car. Her skinny legs were naked pale, her scraps of girl wear bleachy white. Her hair was woven Swedish gold against her chest, the cap pressed tight. And not a thing this world has seen, nor in its dozing orbit dreamed, was ever half so marvelous to me as Eddie's sister seemed. My father was not much into music. In fact, he began listening to classical music, and I asked him why he was suddenly sitting there. He said, my psychiatrist told me I had to. I thought, oh my gosh, what is this about? He has to listen to this? I listened. I couldn't hear anything. And anyway, he wasn't much into church either, but he had a definite sense of life as struggle. A favorite hymn of his at our congregational church captured that sense of life. This is Dad's hymn. In church, oh, are ye able? My father loved to sing, intoning, said the master, and how his voice would ring. And then to bear the cross, his hand upon my head. And you are my cross to bear, is what he always said. Here's another poem about childhood, but not mine. I call this poem Amelina, but I was tempted just to call it Eve. Amelina. That summer through, all unaware, your pale feet raced across the grass. You loped the hay-soft orchard path. Your lean, long legs were always bare. A little printed shift you'd wear, so brief that when you jumped the fence or swung on limbs at any chance, you'd show too much, all unaware. Your blue eyes with their owlet's stare would give an instant's audience before you'd shrug or pull a face or laugh, just laugh, without a care. One day you bent to frown at where sly red was snaking down your thigh, then smeared it with a careless swipe and dashed away, all unaware. That fall your aunts put up your hair and bothered over scabby knees and sat you at the vanity, explained what fresh young curves must bear. Summer returns with days as fair, but not, I think, wild Eve's allure, or any laugh that's just a laugh, or maiden's glance all unaware. I could assemble a short book, just the poems I've written about animals, bats, crows. I think that had to do with growing up on a farm, but you don't have to live on a farm to write about spiders and dogs, these two poems. First one's called Spider. Your little sack of body, bouncing on 8 precisely planted points, goes scaling walls too sheer for clinging, as though you sought some lofty space for secret reasons of your own. For any fly that's worth the snaring is likely here as way up there, or trapped beneath the window panes. Or do you justify your striving as gaining heights I cannot squat, had I a reason I have not, to end such awe-aspiring? Some of you know this. It's called Invitation to a Dog. Tammy published this in one of her excellent, excellent anthologies. You liked to dive at brambles, and when the job was done, you'd sport a badge of burrs. Your nature was to run. You'd fire sandy bullets and dashes through the foam and never catch a fish. Your nature was to roam. Wherever did you go those moon-mad nights in May, you'd scratch my door at dawn and sleep the day away. Then, late when yellow fall, it seemed you'd gone for good. But first frost saw you home, your muzzle flecked with blood. So come and lie a while, there's gray about your eyes. You think I never notice your struggle when you rise? You're welcome on the porch beside my rocking chair. You'll find the goodly sun is kind to stiff hips there. You think I never ran or dived into a fight or loosed a lusty howl or stalked the restless night? I don't have anyone to say good dog to me, explain the day has come and what must be, must be. I say you've earned your place, and damn all how it seems. The road, the moon is bright on roads we're roaming in our dreams. Some poems are called literary or academic, and that's terms usually are not meant as a compliment. The idea is that to write a poem about a book or work of art somehow lacks authenticity. You're writing about someone else's experiences. Well, my reply is that I have experiences when I read a book or look at a picture, and sometimes I express them in a poem. William Blake was one of the early Romantic era poets, earlier than Byron, Shelley, Keats. He was a tormented visionary, enraged at injustices, also at times very put out with heaven. The title of this poem refers to the little boys forced to climb up chimneys to clean them. They often died very young. Blake imagined them naked, clean, joyous, running through heaven. This is called The Chimney Sweeper. That William Blake who sang clamorously of boys employed as human rags for soot, in visions brushed the lamb's white purity, saw heaven's children naked, head to foot. That William Blake who glowered back at night, wherein those lambs that our eyes never see become luminous in the tiger's sight and God's, dared ask aloud how that could be. That William Blake, who scarcely got his bread, labored to prove God born in Albion, found no ecstasy in the marriage bed, and woke to light merely human at dawn. That William Blake, querulous heretic, spied in the orphan, harlot, convict too, the night worm lodged in the rose grown sick, saw churches bolt their doors when north winds blew. That William Blake, as if atop a hill, waved long his flag of happiness and love. How could he cease to speak or drop his quill, unheeded on earth, unanswered above? Mad William Blake in his nursery saw God, screamed, but later strolled with Jesus, we see, and pardoned heaven, all churches flawed, but pleased archangels read his poetry. This is another so-called academic poem. Each stanza evokes an image in a painting by Vincent van Gogh. The sowers of a field, two people, perhaps lovers, under one of van Gogh's wild night skies, or lost souls in a bar at midnight, or faces among great dark trunks or boles of trees outside the asylum where he spent his last days. At the Van Gogh exhibit, there are so many faceless ones, the sower fist out flung, whose seeds are cast before the setting sun's great radiant bore recedes along turbid golden furrow upon furrow to tomorrow. The solitary too, whose fate is to deflect the viewer's eye, who turn to go, but ever wait beneath that star-torn canopy, where the apocalyptic night shatters pillars of earthly light. The folded men in that red hell that never brings dawn's benison, beneath the clock that cannot tell what time expects of anyone. Or say if in another place these shapes might find a human face. Inserted among the truer boles of native and sufficient trees, or pasted upon asylum walls, who but life's diaspora these? This is a poem about war, but not with guns. It seems increasingly that drones and robots, called bots, will do the killing on the battlefield. Killing is as old as Cain and Abel, but the technology is new. In this poem, Cain explains the change to God. Cain, Cain, my son. I read that Cain may be excessed, bots slain more efficiently. No human sludge of judging why, no cry to be or not to be. The raptor drones, the spellbound bots, I read today, take Abel out in nanoseconds, squalls of death, with never a glitch called doubt. Where's my brother Abel, Lord? Screening ID'd him enemy, his risk ratio not excluding hypothetical threat to me. A rocket-capable new drone uploaded Abel's threat profile. I lifted not my hand, O Lord. That summer I napped a while. As I mentioned, I grew up in Massachusetts. I spent several happy years in Boston. There's some debate whether the ideas that drove the American Revolution were chiefly Enlightenment ideas or chiefly of the Protestant Reformation. It's not either or, of course. This poem brushes up against both. It's called The Yankee Doodle Boy. Boston boy, when you marched, what did you believe in? The gentry's storming slopes of friendly old Breed's Hill, barring the bridge in April's dusk at Lexington, to kill or be killed, denying empire's will. Boston boy, why take arms for this small colony? Not even America yet, New England first. Why test at Valley Forge limits of loyalty in footsteps of iron Washington where shells burst? Boston boy, was it oblique gold of woodland sun, cathedral alone with God where you felt free, your soul, your compass, and holy communion, that taught you saving man still walks with you and me? Boston boy, you had revered old country and tongue, but raced down forest paths with an idea and a gun. A Yankee Doodle boy at a dandy dawn so young, this old world woke bedazzled by the rising sun. Poets have avoided, not avoided actually, the subject, some have, subject of their own mortality. Dylan Thomas made it a dominant theme and managed at 39, reportedly, to drink himself to death. The Romantic era, though, made death a very dominant theme. Think of Keats and Byron. Now, speaking poems is infinitely superior to silent reading, but there are some glitches. I use the word fainting in this poem, but it's not fainting like the vapors. It's the move in boxing that makes your opponent back off. Also, I don't know if any of you know the poem by Thomas Hardy called In Tenebris. It's the only place I ever came across the word tenebris, but I took it to describe the impenetrable darkness of the sky. In our stars, the Gulf shore mild this April night in Mexico, a fainting tide has edged me up the beach. I lie with chilling sand beneath my back and stalk a tenebrous sky outstretched like wings of Nemesis. Skip star to star upon the track of Hunter Orion. Stitched into the sprinkled infinite, he braces for the instant. His pose must crack, the black club fly. He seems to cock his wrist tonight at the approach of some fresh foe, discerned by heaven's second sight. The hunter's dire, patient eye, in human calm, presage the blow. The world falls silent before we die. When I was growing up, we raked the fallen leaves into the street, and we squirted them with lighter fluid and tossed a match. Whoosh! A few minutes of standing guard with a rake and no more leaves. You never forget the smell. Friends called out to each other from fire to fire and stepped over to visit. Today, our protectors view this as far too much responsibility for mere citizens. Seasonality. Yellow and red, cascading fast. Yellow and red, cascading fast. Each leaf concedes, fall cannot last. Winter stalks nearer night by night. At dawn I find each leaf curled tight. I banked on fires we would tend, falls past when raking leaves would end. And up and down Shrewsbury Street, through the smoke-spiked air, friends would greet. I hearken for clangor church bells make, but fear this season well may break that pact you pledged to me in spring to face the worst winter could bring. This is the next to last poem. It's called Directions for My Wake. If in this little box of house, among its clustering old trees, beside black waters of my pond, I happen to die when no one sees, not wife, brother, or only son, do not remember me alone. Know that I rarely fail to think how home a boy, a family, conquered with steady, patient love those fears and doubts assailing me. And twice I found a family. In my heart now the two are one. You'll make for me an Irish wake with whiskey, wine, and poetry. Summon the Irish minstrelsy, Danny Boy and Bally James Duff, ever invite my spirit home. Don't stop till ye've had enough. Ardor and sentiment satisfied, select a poem that launches me on thoughts ever ahead at dawn, though I sail for eternity. And the last poem from my new book, Speak Their Names Once More, that is the title of the poem, too. I wrote it as the news of the Las Vegas mass shooting came out and the toll of the dead, dying, and wounded kept mounting. Speak Their Names Once More, Las Vegas shooting, October 1st, 2017. Recite their 59 names. Is it more? Add then 500 names, just give or take. For you and I today should keep the score of dead and dying, wounded. And for their sake, make with me one more time the sounds of names a mother at dusk called for them at play, who bled and bleed from individual veins, have died or die or cry in pain this day. Recite the names that I may listen to sounds a lover murmured as sleep came on. I cannot bear the entombed silence when the shots, sirens, pleas, curses, screams are gone. Pretty legs in cowboy boots to turn ahead, an autumn evening gay, a country song. Each a happiness assassinated. In our world now, such things do not belong. Make sounds of names again, that I may hear echoes of some friend phoning who might say, in words that then we did not hold so dear, just needed to hear your voice today. Thank you.
Walter, thank you so much. What a contribution. You are truly a romantic poet, a man of meter, rhyme, and it's a rare aspect that we don't get to hear very often now. What does it take to become a Suffolk County Poet Laureate, which honors the art of poetry within the county and presents the face of it to the rest of the world? Tammy Nuzzo Morgan was selected as the first woman to be awarded this accolade in 2009. Added to this prestigious title, she was named the Long Island Poet of 2017 by the Walt Whitman Birthplace. Getting to know Tammy just recently, I would say she is a poet with a vision and a mission. She has her master's in accounting and finance, her master's in fine arts in poetry and literature, and is now completing her PhD at Union Institute and University in interdisciplinary studies, humanities, and culture. Her dissertation tells you a great deal about her personal life. It is titled The Healing Power of Poetry, Living with the Death of a Child. In her introduction to her thesis, she states, "I have staked my own survival and thriving as a productive member of society on the concept of the healing power of poetry." Her passion can grip you, I assure you. Tammy is compelled to prove that poetry can be a refined healing process. She will be conducting a 2-year workshop on this promising subject. She has an extensive resume. She is the founder of the North Sea Poetry Scene, which publishes an annual anthology called Long Island Sounds. She conducts prison poetry workshops, has published multiple volumes of poetry. One of her books called Let Me Tell You Something was nominated for a Pulitzer. She calls herself a gate crasher. And she has been called a grassroots poet. Here is a sample of some of her work, which moves me with its gritty, too-common-to-be-observed Observations of Daily Life, poem number 6. I am not the Coca-Cola girl, the Cheez-It tidbit waiting for you to taste, the limo ride to the Yankees game, the Wrangler jeans chick baking in the New Mexico sun. And I never was or will be Sunday mornings in spring. I am the time ticking away second hand, the flat tire on the side of the road, the too high door jam, the worn out toothbrush, the 59 cents in the ashtray, the lunch poems dog-eared book, and the who never forgets to tell the truth. Let's welcome Tammy Nuzzo Morgan.
Thank you. Wow. I hope I can move up to your... Thank you so much for having me and for coming out and not going to the wedding but coming over here. You know, we could crash that wedding and act like... Okay. No. I'll be reading mainly from my new book, Howling the Moon, which was published in Wales, but I wanted to recite my favorite poem. They're like children, you're not supposed to have one, but I do. Howling wind brushes budding branches against our pasta poor home. Rain beats into a slightly opened window, allowing sprinkles to moisten our just-loved faces. Moonlight dances shadows across our nesting room. I catch glimpses of the smiling corners of your thoroughly kissed mouth. Lying within the garden, there are no snakes, no fruit, no booming voices, no condemnation, no you, no I, only us. I take you into the belly of me. I love me best, me, which is only another word for you. And after, as with all storms, there is calm, sleep, dreams. Then to wake to morning's light and your Michelangelo finger that draws me back to your side to fill the chasm within your ribs. Walter, I do have a Raking Leaves poem, and I'll make sure I read it just for you. I want to go back to before it all began, back before my mother walked away, before my father's hands touched me, before bruises, before scars, before mini vacations came in pills, before children, before crying, before my child dying, before I was fractured, splintered, broken, before the possibilities were dwarfed by my clawing my way out. I want to go back to before it all began, before my thoughts were brainwashed and my mouth spewed bile, my hands drew with dark crayons, before my voice screeched with the notes of loathing. I want to go back to before it all began, before my parents were in the throes of lust and I became the byproduct. I want to splash their heated bodies with cold water, halt the action. I want to go back. Someone somewhere. Someone somewhere is writing a poem. Someone somewhere is worried about her hair. Someone somewhere is playing patty cake. Somewhere someone is talking about catching the biggest fish. Someone somewhere is washing dishes. Someone somewhere is cleaning his rifle. I see the ivy, how she creeps, feel is finding roots, spreading her life out. Under snow, she somehow stays vividly green, somehow endures. Her only desire to grow, and he each spring attacks with snippers, dominating where and how she will exist. Sweat rolls down his back, his arms. She, stoic, stays silent while he slices. Her aroma lingers. His rake clears away her effort, revealing earth. Prongs dig into her and into last autumn's leaves. Tidbits of trash. He surveys his work, smiles at the result. She knows this dance. We'll try again when he isn't watching. So I do have a wide range of poetry. I do write in meter and in form, but I tend not to like to do that. I find it very freeing in that it's almost like a mathematical equation, and being an accountant, that appeals to me. But I do like the freedom of free verse. This one, I really like this. This is not meter. It's entitled News for Today. The reporter announced on this morning's news how a 35-year-old woman was not murdered by her husband, her boyfriend, lover, date. She was not stabbed or shot. She did not suffer any broken bones, black eyes, nor was she raped or even threatened. The reporter announced on this afternoon's news how a 17-year-old girl was not slipped the date rape drug, was not photographed or videotaped. Her ordeal was not broadcasted out over the internet. She was not lured by some boy in some chat room, nor has she gone missing from her home. The reporter announced on this evening's news how a 77-year-old woman was not molested by the man who robbed her purse as she waited for the elevator. She wasn't robbed either. She got to go do her shopping, went home, and took a nap. So I'm one of 14 children. I always have to say Irish, Italian, Catholic, covering, but I am. I'll pick that up later. When you say you're one of 14, it's like, oh. But anyhow, I'm number 10. But I've lost six sisters and a brother, and so this poem is for my sisters, and I'll name them Mary, Hazel, Claire, Jackie, Nancy, Sherry. Those are the ones I'm writing about, and it's entitled Sisters. You left me behind, the youngest, not allowed to tag along. I stand in for photos and functions. Your children search my face, hoping to see a bit of yours. They flock. A storm approaches. I shelter them beneath broken wings. We somehow form a family. But what happened to the gaggle of girls I belonged to? Each night we are together, we are all young and beautiful, our children are still young. Each day I'm strapped into a carny ride of emotions, anger clicks up, up, up. Grief shouts, hold on! Then sorrow plunges down, 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 until I can no longer breathe. Acceptance slows motion until I come to a complete stop, where memory waits to escort me home. So this is a poem, I think it's called a lipogram, if I'm saying it correctly, where you keep out one vowel. Am I correct on that? Is that the name of it, Virginia? I don't know. Well, tell me what vowel I left out, okay, when I'm done with this. So you have to describe something but not use, okay. Date and temperature don't match. Packed away summer wear and fans, pool toys and lounge set, washed and stored. Cut back beech grasses and bushes around the yard. Yet the warmer temperature comes back to tease, to cause me to take these pants, these shoes off, turn on pool heater, open the barbecue, steal one more day away from autumn, and allow summer to stay for one more day. Store away the photo, memory embedded, know the pardon won't last long. Look at you there. Look at as never before, as to never be again. Look at me here, not the same, nor want to be. Frost to cover our yard, our world, soon enough. Stay by me as long as you can. Take your socks off. The stones beneath your feet warm your want. Your eyes back to when we just met. Yes.
I.
Yeah, what am I talking about?
I.
No, but what's the occasion?
Oh, I don't know. I was listening to the vowel.
When is it, like, you're almost into autumn and then it gets hot for a day or two?
Oh, it's an Indian summer.
Indian summer, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
What do you mean we're missing a vowel?
You're not allowed to use one of the vowels, so you have to pick which vowel you don't want to use.
Somebody heard of the word this.
What?
Somebody heard of the word this.
This?
That's
T-H-I-S.
Uh-oh.
You mean no word had an I?
No.
Can I help her?
No, there's no this. But you can check me. There's copy of this. One is already $10. No, there's no I. I promise. You can check me, though. Check me. Okay. So this is a form poem. I really don't. It is. I think it's a rondeau. I believe it's a rondeau. It's entitled Waiting. When the bells toll, I remember the sun in your eyes, your hair, the taste of our parting kiss, the burn of your fingers. The sun in your eyes, your hair reminds me of hooded falcons released. The burn of your fingers reminds me of stove splatterings. Reminds me of hooded falcons released, the moan my chasm creates. Reminds me of stove splatterings, the singe of scorched wand. The moan my chasm creates fills the October sky. The singe of scorched want wafts into our noses. Fills the October sky, my drifting desire, my lingering longing, wafts into our noses, the imprint of our lovemaking. My drifting desire, my lingering longing, frees me from you, the imprint of our lovemaking, the dream I forget upon awakening. The sun in your eyes, your hair, when the bells toll, I remember the burn of your fingers, the taste of our parting kiss. So we were talking about Robert Long before. I heard somebody talking about Robert Long. He was my first poetry teacher. And I went to a workshop. My daughter's 26 now. She was just an infant. And I really needed to do something for me. I was 30, had three children. And I was like, I'm going to lose my mind. So I came out to East Hampton once a week for 6 weeks. And it was at the library. And he would just tear me up. And after a while, he saw my face. And he said, what's the matter? I said, well, you're really nice to everybody else. But then when you get to me, you're really mean. And so one of the ladies said, don't you understand? He thinks your work is good. And it's not like... But it was really disheartening after a while, not understanding. So I wrote this poem for him. Sadly, he's no longer with us, and I always appreciated what he gave me. So this is entitled In, for Robert Long. So this is supposed to be the great metaphor for the gotta-get-toothers that want the pain to stop, like a shot of morphine, like a visit from Morpheus, who brings dreams that become reality even for a temporary time. A place where a red and golden dragonfly morphs into that perfect person with all the answers to all your questions. And suspended reality becomes that higher plane of existence, and only the most holy dwell. But still you stand there with your nose pressed against the window pane, unable to explain why you cannot find your way in, into the maze through the haze of the days that have blinded your vision, from seeing the path that the children trot down as they play hopscotch. All you do is stuff your hands into your pockets that are full of stuff that you protect as if they were delicacies you were able to take to the table and serve up as a part of the meal of the soul. But you know deep down all it is another slice that you is another slice that you gave up to be part of that scene that dances at the club to the beat that drives the grind and produces the sweat on the necks and backs and arms of the women and men who are searching. And you walk away spent, another day carved away from your Thanksgiving dreams. And because you did not stand up for them, those with no tongues or arms or legs, to those who wield the power without grace. So you go home and lie down and watch TV and try to blur out the images in your mind. Or you pick up a book that holds this poem and take a look and play hide and seek within the lines and finally think that you know what it all means, but it's not here, it's in you. You are the poet, the Morpheus, the god of dreams. Spin that red and golden dragonfly into that perfect person. Turn her into a flaming redhead with flowing hair. Drape her in a dress spun of gold. Give her wings to fly you out and above the city. Look upon all that stirs below. Swoop down into the alleyways and doorways and subways and witness the pulse of the people. Remember and write. So as Dee was saying, I am writing this dissertation. I did lose my eldest son. He was 17 at the time, crossing the street in Southampton Village, and he was hit by a car. She was speeding. She had ice cream, and it was July 29th, so his anniversary is coming up. And he'd be 39 now. So it's tough. It never goes away. It's like a jagged piece of glass, and after a while, the edges kind of smooth out and stays in your belly, but you learn how to live with the death of your child. So this one is one that I wrote concerning Michael, watching ants. At first, I wanted the whole world to burn, every creature in it, nothing left, no sea or poem. I didn't care about the boy next door kicking dandelions off his lawn, or the bamboo shoot poking up through the tar in the road to get to sunlight, or the ants toiling dirt out of their hill. I just wanted it all to be gone, never to return. How dare children laugh in the waves and mothers smile in delight? How dare cars stay in their lanes doing speed limits? I wanted to sink to Haiti, taking everyone with me. No more breeze or starlight or linguine with white clam sauce or large tea with two tea bags. After time smoothed the jagged edges of my pain, I saw life in her perpetual way continued. She did not have the luxury of lying in bed day and night, not caring, not wanting. Now I stop to watch ants build, thinking how silly we all are. But the work must continue, doesn't it? So this is a fun poem. When I was going for my MFA, it was kind of weird because I was the poet laureate of Suffolk County. At the same time, I was a student at Stony Brook, and so my professors, so I had to write this poem. It kept me definitely grounded and humble. And I always think of Golda Meir. She always said, "Don't be humble. You're not that great." So it really helped keep me grounded. Anyhow, we had to write a silly little poem. So I wrote Ms. Dimplecheeks. I hope you enjoyed it. Ms. Dimplecheeks was a woman of 61 inches who liked the fact that she wasn't taken too seriously. It was her smile that made men ooh and women wave her off. Ms. Dimplecheeks took coffee and scones on Tuesdays and Thursday afternoons with Mayor How Do You Do. The conversation always turned to seashells and hill climbing. He thought her head full of fluff, and she knew his was full of cheese. Year after year, they went on like this until Miss Brightest Star joined them, which made tea time a triangle of words and bridge not possible. But dog barks were interrupted. Folks in the village smirked at Ms. Dimplecheeks as she strolled by, but she just smiled. So it was a silly little poem, and I liked it because it allowed me a free one. As when I don't suffer through writing a poem, I always say they're free. But this one I kind of like. This is not your poem. It doesn't have a damn thing to do with you. So don't be concerned with what's written in it. It isn't about you at all, and it doesn't hold a fragment of you. This isn't your poem. It never was. It doesn't care one thing about you. As a matter of fact, I think I heard it chuckled that you thought it was your poem. It contains not one molecule of you or what you're about. It is totally unrelated to you and the world you live in. I overheard the other poems whispering about how this is not your poem. So this is a poem form. It's called a huzzle. Starts with a G, and it's a conversation between a young man and a woman. It's supposed to be romantic, and you're supposed to put your name in there. And I was telling Dee and Lee before that I did my DNA, and I found out I'm 36% Jewish, and my family never knew this. We always thought we were Italian and Irish, and that was that. So, and it's kind of funny because my name is Tammy, and in Hebrew it means the palm tree. And I thought it was kind of neat. So anyway, this is a huzzle, and it's called Monsoon Season. And what you do is you take a certain word and you have it at the end of each couplet. They're written in couplets. obvious why. And so my word is storm. When you raged, I thought it was my end. Wind sliced hope as I was woken by the storm. I searched the upturned house for the jar of words you had softly spoken, now lost by the storm. Hot words and dried flowers were the treasures I saved, memories and tokens stolen by the storm. Gone, swept away, all the light we had glowed in, all the air we had taken in, evaporated by the storm. My name is Tammy, the palm tree in Hebrew. I shall not be broken by the storm. So, as I said before, I'm a recovering Catholic. It's very hard growing up. I've had my communion. I've been baptized. I've been confirmed. For those of you that are not Catholic, but when I was little, we'd have to go do a confession, and after you went in there, you'd say, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been X amount of time since my last confession. Then you tell him what you did. And then he gives you the sentence, and it's usually, like three fathers and one Hail Mary. And if you look at rosary beads, you'll see five beads, then one bead. So it's five Our Fathers, one Hail Mary. And if you do the whole bead and then the cross coming down, that's called a novena. And before you die, they give you last rites, which gives you absolution so you don't wind up in hell. I don't know. They got this really good deal worked out, and I don't know about it. I'm trying to bring a penitent. When you go to confession, you're a penitent. So you have penitent slips or whatever. So these are just some things you may not know if you're not Catholic. And cumbia is a dance that originated in Colombia. So. Penance. I seek absolution from my confessor, the images thoughts of you conjure. I profess how your dark curls alone cause me ecstasy. I whisper with penitent's lips that your thighs bring Ave Maria from my throat. Blasphemy, my sin, when I confess your face is as beautiful as Christ's. Novena, my sentence, for praying the rosary doesn't drive demons from my belly. All I desire is us performing the cumbia and you speaking my name in the dark. So I'm going to read Raking Leaves, and there's also part two, which is Shoveling Snow for Walter, because you reminded me when I was a kid we used to be able to burn leaves, but no more. And then this will be my last poem. Thank you so much for listening. Raking Leaves and Shoveling Snow. I want to be the color of flames that seem to lick at tree branches as leaves ready themselves for flight. To be made pure, thoughts released, to be carried away in darkening skies, mingled with the smell of wood fires burning in homey hearts. To dance, spiral earthward, become part of the forest bed for animals to rest on. To be brilliant sunlight, coaxing the acorn to become the oak that will be felled to carve the cradle, to rock the wise one who will heal the world's wounds. 2. Shoveling Snow. I am perfect here in the snow within the whiteness. If I keep my eyes shut long enough and tilt my face just so, I could be enveloped, reabsorbed into the beginning, the end. In this crystal bright blanket woven one flake at a time, there is no dread, no desire, no need to be better, anything other than myself. I do not have need for company nor for rescue. I do not need to be called in from the cold. I am one with the pureness of the dead.
Well, I say you don't have to be humble. You should be very proud of your accomplishments. You're a wonderful poet, and you are the first woman poet laureate of Suffolk County and now the Walt Whitman Birthplace Poet of 2017. Well deserved. We're very privileged to have you here today. And Walter, thank you again.